WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, TV critic for the New York Daily News, sitting in for Terry Gross. The Emmy Awards are presented this Sunday on NBC, the first time they've been televised before Labor Day. Today we're going to visit with some of the people whose shows are up for awards. We'll start with House, the Fox series that stars Hugh Laurie as an acerbic but brilliant doctor, tackling one baffling medical case after another. In an even more baffling case, Laurie was snubbed by the Emmy voters in the Best Actor category this year, one of the season's most egregious oversights. But House the series was not overlooked and is one of the five shows nominated for Outstanding Drama. Our guests are David Shore, the creator and executive producer of the series, and David Foster, a physician who left his work at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston to be an executive story editor, writer, and medical consultant on House. Terry spoke with them last year. Here's a clip from the show, in which Hugh Laurie as Dr. House and Lisa Edelstein as his boss debate whether a sudden seizure by a healthy young female athlete is a symptom of spinal meningitis. House doesn't think so.
12-year-old female, fever, rash, neck pain. It's not meningitis.
It's the definition of meningitis.
Sure. Pus in the spinal canal makes it hurt to move your head up and down, but her neck only hurts moving side to side.
Well, side to side.
Doesn't fit.
The three of you lobby now.
Those little pills you're passing out so efficiently aren't going to do Miss Luganis squat.
You just don't want to deal with the epidemic.
That's right. I'm subjecting a 12-year-old to a battery of dangerous and invasive tests to avoid being bored. Okay, maybe I would do that, but I'm not. If it turns out she's got meningitis, you're right, you win. But if we go back downstairs and she dies, your face will be so red.
You have 1 hour.
Get a lumbar puncture. Some brain infections can be pretty clever at hide and seek.
I'll get enough blood work.
No, you won't. You, sir, will research all the causes in the universe of neck pain.
The list is like 2 miles long.
We'll start with the letter A and put her on rifampin.
Rifampin is for meningitis. You just said,
in case I'm wrong. It has happened.
David Shore, Dr. David Foster, welcome to Fresh Air. David Shore, how did you describe the series when you were first pitching it?
It's a very different series now than what we initially pitched. We came in with just the basic procedural element of it. The character of Dr. House was not defined in any way, shape, or form. It much more closely resembled Law and Order or that kind of show, except with germs as the suspects and germs as the bad guys and investigating that news. It was pitched as a team of doctors who try and diagnose the undiagnosable cases. It's a show. What I realized was when you're dealing with a procedural police drama, you've got all these motives. You've got all these people hiding things. Germs don't do that, obviously. You don't have one germ framing another germ because he was sleeping with the first germ's wife.
That would make an interesting series.
It would. If I could have done that, this show, that's what I would have done. But we couldn't. So we realized that, and it just makes it better, ultimately, is we realized, well, you can't just have a dry procedural in this environment. We have to make characters interesting. And I just started thinking about what sort of doctor would be interesting to watch, and it evolved from there.
What you said, a doctor who's really unpleasant would be interesting to watch. A doctor who's really rude to everybody, very condescending.
I did, actually. That's exactly what I decided. I just think, from my personal dealings with doctors, I just find that most of what they deal with is so mundane and so uninteresting that it's got to drive them crazy. And also, I think that most people would love their jobs a lot more if they didn't have to deal with people. And we all view ourselves
not
as
me.
Being
I
surrounded.
Wouldn't have a job if I wasn't.
That's a good point. But there are other people, I'm sure. We all view ourselves as being the brilliant people being surrounded by idiots on a certain level. We also all view ourselves as being hopelessly unqualified and fooling everybody. But I just thought it'd be really interesting to have a guy who just said those things and just wasn't afraid to say those things.
So where do you get the rare diseases from? Where do you find them? Do you go looking through rare medical books or through, medical sections of newspapers and magazines? You know, Dr. Foster, did you actually have cases like any of the ones on House?
Some of the cases are from my experiences and the experiences of some of the other doctors that we have working on the show. Some come from medical journals. Some come from the internet, friends at parties, doctors who I think we're always canvassing the doctors that we know for what their most interesting case was or what their most difficult problem that they had to solve was.
So, and their most most annoying patient as well.
Their most annoying.
Well, my favorite diagnosis, there was an episode where I think it was like a teenage boy, this was a few weeks ago, was sick, and everybody thought, oh, he's been poisoned or he's been exposed to some kind of toxic. And it turned out it was had to do with his exposure to termites in the wall of his home that no one even knew were there. No one even knew the home had termites. But Dr. House, figuring this out, actually goes punches a hole in the wall, finds the termites.
Only after spitting on a surgeon to stop a surgery mid-process.
And autopsying the cat to find the termite in the cat's belly, the cat that died.
So who came up with this termite-related, I hope, rare illness?
That actually came out of a conversation between myself and one of the writers and a consultant from the CDC. We were actually calling about a different story, and the person said, you know, this is something that I find interesting. This was an interesting story to me, and we took it and ran with it.
Not only is House like a brilliant doctor and detective, you know, the Perry Mason of medicine, but he does everything himself. You know, he's given one woman a gynecological internal exam. He's done a pelvic ultrasound for another. Now, doctors never do ultrasounds. There's technicians who do ultrasounds. So, like, Dr. Foster, do you ever step in here and say, wait a minute, no one's going to buy this? Like, Dr. House isn't going to be doing these particular procedures.
Well, there's a line between usually does and could. I mean,
yes, he does. And I tell him he's going to do it anyways.
Why is he going to do it anyway?
Because it's more interesting to watch Dr. House do it than to watch some doctor we've never seen before do it. And again, I go back to the conceit of the show. And this may be somewhat of a rationalization, but we've created a character here who doesn't trust anybody. And so to a certain extent, we can get away with pushing the boundaries a little bit because he is so off the wall and he doesn't trust other doctors' tests. So his reaction is going to be, you do it, not somebody else. He wouldn't necessarily personally do it, but his team would do it.
Now, you know, we've talked about what a toxic personality he is and what a bad bedside manner he has. And you've mentioned that, you know, a lot of the stories, a lot of the misdiagnosis is based on lies that the patients or their families tell. Now, in the episode that we've heard clips from, this student who has been in a swimming competition has had seizures. Everybody's convinced it's part of this meningitis outbreak, except Dr. House. He thinks it's something else. And he finds out it is something else. And this something else is also related to the fact that she is pregnant and she hasn't told anybody and she certainly hasn't told her parents. So when he solves the problem and he realizes he's also going to have to perform an abortion to save her life, he can't tell the parents because she doesn't want the parents to know and he doesn't have the right to disclose it if she doesn't want them to know. So I want to play a scene where he's actually trying to describe the diagnosis and the procedure to the parents without actually having to tell them that she's pregnant. Here's the scene.
Your daughter has TTP. Don't worry, it's curable. She'll be fine.
Well, wait. I mean, what does TTP stand for?
Some really big words that you've never heard before, and when we're done, we'll never hear again. Have a nice day.
Well, when can we take her home?
In a few days. She needs some minor surgery to remove the underlying cause before we can do the another really big word.
What's the underlying cause?
She has an abnormal growth in her abdomen.
What kind of surgery?
It's very simple. Do it here all the time.
Could you be a little more specific?
Actually, no. I'm sorry.
You, Lori, the charming Dr. House, in a scene from House. My guests are the creator, David Shore, and Dr. David Foster, who is a consultant and writer for the series. Can you talk a little bit about how the condescending, rude, insulting lines are written for Dr. House?
That's the greatest thing about writing for this show, I think, is writing for Hugh Laurie in particular, writing for this character and writing for Hugh Laurie, because he pulls off these amazing things, and he can take this these incredibly dramatic, incredibly serious scenes, and you can write a joke in the middle of it. And he pulls it off, and it doesn't lose any of its import, and it becomes funny without becoming silly. I think the reason people are responding to him is because he's never nasty just for the sake of being nasty. He's clearly nasty, but there's always some reason for why he's doing it. There's always something he's trying to accomplish, whether it's as simple as learning something about the patient or learning something about the condition, but there's always a reason, or getting them to change their behavior. There's always a reason. And frankly, if we were to go with our guts, we would just write joke, 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 funny, 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 nasty, nasty, nasty. We've got to start with where he's going and what he's trying to achieve and work backwards from that.
You know, in a lot of procedurals, the program basically follows a formula, and you could set your watch by it. Like in Law and Order shows, you could basically know exactly what time the police are going to be done with the story and, you know, the DA is going to come in or the prosecutor is going to come in. And like in House, you could basically set your watch by what time, you know, the patient's going to be brought in, when they're going to be misdiagnosed, when the first breakthrough is going to be in the actual correct diagnosis, and so on. What are the advantages of writing a series that follows a formula?
There's something somewhat comforting about it. The challenge is keeping it. You know, the disadvantages are obvious. I mean, when you describe it that way, it sounds terrible. But I can't argue with it too much. We try and mix it up every now and again. We did one a few weeks ago where at the end of, by the end of Act 2, we knew exactly what was wrong with the person. It was just a question of what's going to happen to them. So we do try and mix it up. But it is the nature of storytelling. It just becomes more obvious in a situation like this that you have a formula going on. But it is comforting. The audience likes to play along. It's a game. It's the audience playing along with the game. The game happens to be exactly 44 minutes long or whatever it is, an hour with commercials. But it is something that people feel used to and comfortable with. And if they like the way it's being told, I think they're going to continue to like it as long as it continues to be smart and continues to, you don't know why. You know something's going to go wrong, but you don't know what's going to go wrong.
I think one of the things that both crime shows and medical shows are doing is pushing the kind of language and descriptions of the body that you're likely to hear on television. Let's face it, you know, Law and Order, SVU, Special Victims Unit, since just about everybody on the show is like a rape victim, there's often some pretty explicit descriptions of the evidence. And, you know, on House, there's been some pretty explicit descriptions too. Do you find that interesting, the way crime shows and medical shows are seem to be pushing the boundaries a little bit of prime time broadcast television?
I do. Practically for our show, it's actually very tricky because we've created this character whose bread and butter is, in a sense, saying the unsayable. And that is the exact opposite of what network instincts are. Network instincts are to not shock people. And it's more dealing with, like in the episode you've played some clips from, there was a rather graphic line where he is trying to convince her to talk to her parents, and he's very, very strong about it. And I think the line was something along the line, if I can say it, it was, you're old enough to bleed out of your vagina, old enough means you're old enough to make your own decisions. And he's, or pardon me, old enough to do whatever you want. And he's obviously trying to make a point to her to say, you're a 12-year-old kid. You've got a lot of growing up to do. If he were to hold her hand and say, you're a 12-year-old kid, you've got some growing up to do, it wouldn't have the same impact. And it was an issue. The very issue of having a 12-year-old pregnant girl on TV was a real issue. And, you know, you've got to choose which battles you fight, and we won that battle.
What did you say to win it?
We said exactly what we've just described here, which is that that's the whole point of this episode. The whole point of this character and the whole point of this episode is this kid is a kid. We are not endorsing that sort of activity for 12-year-olds. We're doing the exact opposite. We are actually talking about how a 12-year-old is a 12-year-old. A 12-year-old is a child. And that is what makes it, that is exactly what they're objecting to, is the shocking nature of it. But the shocking nature of it comes from the fact that she is a child and she is experiencing these adult experiences before she's ready to experience them.
David Shore, Dr. David Foster, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Terry.
David Shore is the creator and executive producer of House. Dr. David Foster is a medical consultant and executive story editor for the show. The new season begins September 5th on Fox. They spoke with Terry Gross in 2005. House is nominated for Outstanding Drama in Sunday's Emmy Awards.